Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career, so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Everybody, it's Jake Sensei, our host, Jake and Gino Podcast, with my co-host, the multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gino Barber, Jr., how's it going?
Jake, got my white shirt on for you, bro. How you doing?
I don't know. I'm like a little worried about it. I think you're slacking. We're going to have a talk after this. But it's your birthday. Happy birthday, sir. So we're gonna give you a pass, but we're stepping the game up next week, all right?
That sounds good to me, my friend.
I got a commitment. That's a yes. All right, today's guest is an experienced and strategic entrepreneur that achieved financial freedom by the age of 30 through real estate investing. Most recently, he became the author of Find Your Financial Freedom. So without further ado, Logan Rankin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, boys, and happy birthday, Gino.
Thank you. Thanks, Logan. How's it going?
He's getting embarrassed now.
Going good, man. I appreciate it.
Logan, let's take it back, because I know when you started in real estate investing, you were dabbling in some houses and some duplexes. What was that inflection point or that big growth moment for you that you went from the onesies and twosies and you really started to scale up? What changed in you? What inspired it? Maybe you can take us through that.
Yeah, I still remember it. It's when I started looking at my properties as not properties anymore, but more of businesses. And it's funny because I was working in a Fortune 50 company, right? And you guys know my story. And everything I was doing in my Fortune 50 company, I wasn't doing growing my real estate portfolio. I was acquiring properties, you know, looking them as properties, running them as properties, but not running them as a business. And once I really started realizing like how to run these properties as businesses, it only made sense to buy bigger and bigger. So my big inflection point was going from, like, I started with a lot. I mean, it took me 3 years to buy 7 units, right? So very, very slow. And I learned a lot. But then, you know, the next year was 10, the next year was 50. And that 50 years was really when I started looking at, well, this is just a business, right? When you acquire a property, there's the same things that you can look into and the same systems that you can be able to build. And you can build those systems. Here's the cool thing is, like, you build one system for that business. Usually, as long as it's a similar property, that system you can use across all of your properties. And that really helped me be able to scale.
Jake, since it's my birthday, can I add a couple of thoughts to what Logan said?
Yeah, I'm not, no comment.
I love what Logan is saying. It's at Jake and Gina, we create multifamily entrepreneurs. And we'll teach you to buy the deals. Our students have closed over 50,000 units. That's, to me right now, it's over $3 billion in assets under management. Woo-hoo, right? Great. Buying and financing and raising capital. But where is the meat and the potatoes? It's managed right. And we really, I think, do a great job of that, because we're vertically integrated. We love that part of the business, and we create multifamily entrepreneurs at Jake and Gino. That's what Logan's talking about, everybody. Those systems and those processes. Now, don't be overwhelmed. You're not going to do it in the very beginning. Your whole thought process in the very beginning is to take down a couple of deals with the thought of, I'm getting out of single families because I don't want to have a couple of onesies and twosies here. I want to be able to really scale this business, but start out buying these deals. And then as you're buying them, learn the manager right process, find somebody who can teach you how to manage these deals, because that's where you truly make your money. Logan, at 30 years old, you're financially free. That to me only means you start really the hard work. That's when the hard work starts, when you become financially free. Do you define financial freedom to me?
I think financial freedom is pretty simple. It's being able to spend your time how you choose. So, like, it's not about the money. It's never been about the money. It's just money opens up the door to buy back your time, right? So that's what it's always been. I want to spend my time every minute of my day how I choose. And I know Jake talks about this a lot, but I've been doing this since I was even at W-2, because I had to get out of my W-2. Is every Sunday I do the same thing, right? I plan out my entire freaking week, and I've been doing it for over a decade. But when you're financially free, it's so liberating, because you can plan out every single minute, not just the eight hours, right? That between your working your W-2 job. And I like what you said too, Gino. I just got to comment on that. That is what has been so sexy for the last 5 years, is, like, you know, finding the deal, finding the money, closing on the deal, celebrating that you closed. But like, how many times do you see people talking about the refi? How many times do you tell people talking about getting excited about the operations and the systems and the things that actually drive, right, the real value? The richest people in the world aren't focused on necessarily cash flow. They're focused on being able to raise their equity, because the more you can raise your equity, that's the best way to be able to do it tax-free, right? That's how you
create it. They're not focused on selling either.
No. They're building the wealth through their equity. And you don't need to be a property management company to do it, but you sure as hell need to hold the property management accountable, or at least be a decent asset manager. But there's such a gap there.
The problem is, the last few years, the market has had such a run-up that people don't have to have operations. But right now, we are at another inflection point. It's called the market cycle, where all of a sudden there is major opportunity coming along. And for all of you that sat along in the market and didn't invest in your education, now I'm gonna get in when the market gets tough. There's people ahead of you that have done that. So if you're hesitant and you're sitting on the sideline and saying, should I get into multifamily now? You should have gotten into it 3 years ago. But it's never too late. It's only time when you're ready. And there are different points in the cycle to buy, whether you're syndicating. Now we're going to have some creative financing coming along. There's so many different inflection points in that part of the cycle. As you started to scale your operations and you're looking at deals, how did you go from 7 units to 15 to 50? What did that blueprint look for you?
Yeah, I think what I started to do is, look, I started to put systems in place that I could repeat. Like, repeatable processes, how you scale. And you got to start looking at your properties as one big business. So what I did, you know, when I first, you don't know what you're doing. At least I didn't know what I was doing when I bought my first few properties. But like you said, just get in the game. So I got in the game and I started learning. I started realizing when you get a property under contract, for example, the next step is due diligence. The step after that is the inspection. The step after that is you got an appraisal, right? So you can start systemizing these repeatable processes and building a team around you that help you with those processes. And that makes the acquisition process, you know, fairly simple. And then you can start making it even better. Like for me, I always share, like, I never just do an inspection. I'm sure you guys don't either. Like, everybody's like, oh, I got to do an inspection to see what's wrong with your property. That's true, but that's only like one small thing, right? You're also like, you can only look at a P&L, for example, for so long and pick it apart. You got to actually be at the property. You got to feel the property. You got to look at how the property is currently being running, so that when I'm at it, I'm doing way more than just inspecting and seeing what's wrong. I'm seeing how they run it. How are their managers running it? What are all the gaps, or what are all the items that I can either take, because they're great, or I could implement my repeatable processes, which will drive NOI. And that's what I did, Gino. I started putting these processes in place that I didn't have before that made me more efficient and more effective. It allowed me to be able to acquire more properties, but it also helped me be able to run these properties substantially better.
So going back to the original question, was it confidence or was it reps? So when you were doing, you know, 7 units a year, and then it went up to 50, and then 100 plus and whatnot. I just want to take it back for folks, because if someone's sitting there with a handful of duplexes and they're looking up and saying, multifamily is this pie in the sky, I can't get there. What was that inflection point? Take them through that, because I think learning from your experience is going to help other folks, because you don't know what their situation is. You can speak to what you've done. So if you can kind of say, like, you know, it was after doing X amount, I gave me the confidence, or was it just the time spent and putting the systems in? What was it that started to excel and bring the unit counts to larger and larger?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jake. I think it was probably a little bit of both. I think the reps gave me the confidence. So after being able to do it a little bit, and to be completely honest, when I got into real estate, I didn't know any, I didn't have any friends, family, anything in real estate.
So probably a good thing.
Yeah, probably. I didn't have to unlearn a lot of the stuff, but I would tell you, after doing it, you know, repeating it over and over and over, that's what gave me the confidence. Like, wow, there's something here. I remember myself getting really excited about some of the wins, or some of the predictability and the control of it, which gave me even more confidence, right, to continue to implement systems that worked. A lot of it is trial and error. So I guess if I'd answer your question, first was the trial and error. Made a lot of mistakes, but by making those mistakes and repeating those things, I was able to learn from those, which gave me a lot of confidence to be able to go, oh, if I can do a 4 unit, then why can't I do an 8 unit? So like, it's the same thing. It's just 4 more units. So like, let's try that next.
It gets easier too, right? Like the larger you go, you bring team members with you. Yes, that brings its own set of problems, but ultimately it gets easier because you're spreading the work amongst the team versus doing it all yourself. And I think that's a huge piece that people miss many times.
I think they do too. I think that's the thing about like small businesses in general too. Yeah. I mean, we, we talked about, you and I talk about this when we chat offline a little bit too, but like, you, the smaller your business is, the harder it is. You know, when you less employees, for example, and one employee leaves, it's really hard to absorb that because that one employee is wearing a ton of hats. But, and that's why like over 90% of small businesses go out of business, right? You know, one mistake is really disruptive to your business. So you want to grow your business as fast as possible because that it does get easier. It's just hard. It's just also hard when you grow it fast. So it just depends on what.
You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, but I take the growth every day.
I would too. I mean, those are problems that you can continue to figure out, but it's certainly way less disruption as you get bigger and you start to learn about contingency plans. But I was just educating somebody on this the other day. If you have two people and you lose one, 50% of the tasks go back on your plate. But if you have 10 employees and you lose one, only 10%, you can easily absorb that 10%. So
same thing with a duplex or a 10 unit. You're going 50% vacant versus 10%. So it's the same thing, man.
Love that. Can we dive into the three-step framework, which is soon to be the four-step framework? Buy right, manage right, finance right, and brand right. I think the branding part is important. And for Logan, less so because he's a syndicator. He's not syndicating deals, but he is, you know, he's written a book. He wants to get his name out there. So that's an important component. Well, because you want to become an influencer, when brokers look you up, they're like, oh, Logan Rankin, he's written a book. He's on shows. So that branding is important. But let's get into the buy right first. What kind of deals have you been looking at? And what are you looking to take down? Your buy right criteria.
Yeah, my buy right criteria right now, and it's ever changing, right? There's a lot of uncertainty in this market. And, you know, we could talk about rates all episode if we wanted to. I'm definitely tightening my buy right criteria right now. And I'm typically looking for anything 50 units or more. If it's a steal less than that, I'll look at it for sure. I'm not afraid to buy smaller. I know you guys aren't either. If it's in the wheelhouse, if it's a good deal, it's a good deal. And your operations are strong enough, I think you should go for it. I love 100 units or more right now. So I actually have a 600 plus unit deal under contract right now, all in one location that I'm super excited about. It's the biggest deal that I've been able to acquire. So I close on that in a couple months. But my buy right criteria would be that for a unit count. And then for right now, for the next year or two, I'm staying within Wisconsin. I want locations that I understand that are cash flow positive, that are, Jake and I talked about this a little bit. I think Wisconsin's like, you know, 5 years behind where a lot of the Southeast is, where you guys are. There's still a lot of mom and pop operations. And at these like rising values, it's been really great, honestly, to be able to find this many deals left available. But I know that's not going to always be there. So I really want to take advantage of that. And then we'll continue to test our systems and go outside of Wisconsin.
As far as the buy right, are you looking for any kind of vintage, age, cap rates, cash on cash returns, anything else you want to add to the buy right?
Yeah, sure. But I mean, all those, I mean, yeah, I love, I mean, my perfect would be a 1970s to 1990s vintage. My property management business is as much property management as is construction. So we keep 85% of the work in-house. So we're turning all the units, right? We're doing everything except for roofs and windows, basically. And even sometimes we do that. So I love 1970s to 2000. We have the labor, we have the material. And we have the speed to be able to do it. So I love the older properties, I guess, C-class and B-class properties, not a lot of A-class properties. And then, so that's like from a vintage standpoint, but cash on cash and cap rates and stuff like that, honestly, like I'll overpay for deals right now. I have overpaid for deals over the last 5 years because I think it's really hard to assess a property as is. And it's important to assess a property like what it could be if you feel really strong and confident, to Jake's point, about what you can do to that property to change the NOI, even with considering interest rates.
He's buying boxes, Gino. Loan to cost, going in, fixing it up, and waiting for that rent after the fix.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Jake, because that transitions perfectly into the finance, right? What kind of, I know you've worked with credit unions, you've done community banks, you've probably got an agency. What are you looking at as far as finance right goes?
Yeah, I usually try to narrow my financing to getting into the deal. I love to get into the deal creatively if I can, or get into the deal with no prepayment penalties because of the boxes I'm buying need a lot of rehab. So I don't want a prepayment penalty. So usually I'm going with a smaller local bank or a community bank or a credit union that I'll negotiate the little to no prepayment. And once I'm done repositioning, I'll refi the first time with them, usually within, let's call it 12 to 24 months. And then I'll finish the repositioning in the next 12 to 24 months and then push it into agency debt. So that's usually my finance.
That's awesome. Love that. We've been able to do that as well. It's a longer term strategy, everybody. You know, transactions pay the bills. Equity makes you rich. And that's what's going on here. You're repositioning the equity. You're putting it on an imaginary conveyor belt, that deal, and it's matriculating. And it may take 12 months to get that first refinance, but then 36 months, 3 years. People think 3 years is a long time. It's not a long time when you get a $3 million check, people. I'm just being completely honest with you. So that's important. Would you want to touch a little bit on the manager, right, as far as value add, valuation through operation as well instead of renovation? That's what we're looking for in this part of the cycle. What are you looking for?
Yeah, same thing. And I this is where I think people should spend more time, because I do think there's, especially with rising, obviously rent increases, there's so much strategy. There's so many systems that you can implement. Something as simple as increasing rent and other income. Don't forget about that. I know you guys are all over that as well. We target 15% now. I think there's a lot of opportunity to drive rent and other income to keep up with market rents. And having good systems around that, or at least managing the manager to be able to do that, is huge. But obviously, to your point, being able to add value to these apartments. So I think thinking about when you acquire a property, what is that repositioning cycle? Like, what will vacancy look like? How fast do you raise rent, right? To be able to allow people to be able to move so you can renovate and get rents up even more. There's a lot of strategy that has to go to that. And then, do you have the team to be able to rehab those units? Mm-hmm. That's something we work really, really hard on here. We want to be able to rehab any unit in 72 hours or less. And I can't remember the last time we haven't done, 18 to 22 is typically a week we're rehabbing these units and spending as much money as I can on adding value to these properties that we're acquiring. And I think that's something that people should pay attention to. You can't find a deal. The next best place to place your money is in the properties you already own. And I don't understand why more people don't talk about that or do that.
Well, I mean, like, growing at scale is 20% per year over year, top line revenue, right? With the market that we're currently in, you could basically buy no deals and potentially grow to scale, just by growing your top line revenue through maybe good loan to cost, good financing, and putting money back into your properties and getting it on the back end. So I think that's a fantastic point. Logan, you had a really interesting corporate background. What did you take from that, and how did you apply it to the multifamily management?
Yeah, I took a lot. And I think I didn't just apply it to multifamily. I think I applied it to just scaling in general. And I think when people think about scaling, they think about just acquiring units. I think about it differently. I think the first thing I think about is, how do you build a business, which we've talked about before, but building a business is about thinking about the systems, the repeatable processes, the standard operating procedures that you need in every area of your business to allow scale. It's thinking about where you're going to be in 7 years, and you build a process that is compatible with that ability to be able to scale. You can't just focus on finding the deals. You have to focus on building the systems and building the business. And my corporation job taught me a ton about that, because I scaled to very high levels of that company. And one of the biggest things that we had to be able to do is make sure that the systems were in place for growth, right? For managing large P&Ls and large teams. And
teams that were, probably not making a ton above minimum wage, right?
Yeah. Which brings you to point number two, Jake, which is leadership. Yeah. Like, one of the biggest things I took away is, and this, I'll never forget this. Every problem that you have while scaling or building a business is a leadership problem. It's a leadership problem. And if you think of it that way, right, because the leader didn't create the system, or you didn't develop the leader, or there's a gap in how he communicated. And to your point,
communication's tough, man. Like, just trying to pull through, just experience in our business, like, we use the Rockefeller habits, and we're stuck, trying to make sure the team is fully aligned on our customer service vision, our blue ocean vision. It's very challenging to get it through, because people have selective hearing. You may be on, the meeting every month saying the same thing, but it's marketing. And that's the thing people miss. Business is hard. Yeah. And then to get people behind a vision so they fully understand the vision and then are, walking the talk, it's not easy. I was explaining to my father-in-law over this last week, and he's just like, you just tell him. I'm like, no, you don't just tell him. It doesn't work like that, dude. It's really hard.
Especially because of what you just said. Like, at my corporation, I was leading people that were making $12 an hour, and then I was leading people that were making $250,000 a year. Yeah. Like, you can't communicate to both those parties the same way. And I think some of the best leaders I know are able to take complex issues and communicate them very simply, right? You just said, how do you get your entire team around the same message? Well, the simpler you can keep that message, and the more you can follow up and repeat that message, the stronger it's going to be.
And I don't know how many reps it is. It could be the 500th time that they heard it. It could be the 50th. It's not the fifth. I'm telling you right now. No. So,
and that's what's tough about growth, right? Because you're constantly changing. Yeah. You're constantly, you know, you don't want stability is really important as you scale too. So that's, there's a lot of strategy. And I just think there's a lot of, I spend the majority of my time in my property business now on development and strategy, and development specifically when it comes to our leaders. Because the better your leaders are, the easier it is to scale. They come up with more positive, innovative solutions. You know, they're better driven for greatness. They are focused on delivering, like you said, we want to deliver an enthusiastic wow in every experience. Like there's a lot that goes into that.
I'll share a story with both of you. How, to me, it's challenging sometimes, because being an entrepreneur, being a leader, it's lonely. You are freaking lonely. You're expected to show up and work every day. It's my birthday. Didn't even think about taking off today because I need to work for the team. And Jake and I bought a property a couple of years ago with several partners. Jake worked the property. Nobody else did anything. The team did it.
That's not true, dude. Everyone contributed, though.
No, team. I'm talking about the partners themselves. We all sat here doing nothing. The team did all the work. 2 years later, we refied a nice sizable chunk of money. I talked to Jake that day. I said, bro, you guys rocked it. Congrats. Thanks, man. You put food on the table for my kids. I said, anyone else reach out to you? Goose eggs. And that's the reality. So if you're doing this because you want to be liked, or you want that adulation,
you want some friends, they ain't there.
you ain't going to be a leader. And that's the reality. Yeah. You're doing it to create impact for others. And for me and Jake, I think that's why I created Jake and Gino. I love getting these texts and these emails every day that we're changing people's lives. And I know that that's what drives Jake. He is not waiting for somebody to call him up and say, hey, dude, great job. But as a leader, you need to be on.
Dude, I'd be waiting a long time, man.
but as a leader, you need to be aware that people need that. That's what they need. What's in it for them? That's what's in it for you. You speak last and you listen, you try to assess. And that's what's really difficult about being a leader, because you think the leader's out there, you know, barking orders and telling everyone what to do. Not really. You need to be the last person to listen to be heard and see what's going on and assess it. So for those of you out there, it can be lonely. It can be tiring. But if you have that makeup and you want to make impact and you want to take control of your life, man, there's no better place to do it than being an entrepreneur. Before we go to short answers, Logan, talk about the brand, right? Talk about the book. Why did you write the book, and what are you trying to create with the Logan Rankin brand?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm a little bit more focused, honestly, from a brand standpoint with my property management company. I think we're actually trying to disrupt the property management industry, you know, similar to you guys, just doing things a lot different and doing things of, you know, what I think residents deserve. My personal brand and why I wrote the book, a little bit different. Like I think I'm the poster child for this. I went through until I was 24, 25, all through school, college, society, and I didn't learn anything about financial literacy. I mean, in 2010, when I graduated college, I had $40,000 worth of debt. And nobody taught me any of these things. So one of the biggest push for me and what my biggest goals is, you know, to go from $40,000 in debt to, you know, in a month owning a quarter of $1 billion worth of real estate, you have to learn a lot about financial literacy. And I wanted to write a book so that, because books help change my life, so that more people I don't think are going to necessarily get it from school or from society. And maybe they don't have rich parents or friends or anything like that, similar to me. And like, I think if you read this book, it's going to give you the framework that you guys focus so much on. This will give you the framework for financial freedom. And by the way, it's the same framework that I use with my wife today. It's a three-step process that we do, that we slow down, you know, once a month, and we talk about our goals. We talk about our vision. You know, we talk about what kind of intensity level that we need to do to run our lives, not just our business, but our lives like CEOs together. And then what do we need to do to create the velocity to drive towards financial freedom? So, I'm very focused on that. My wife and I actually just started a foundation. So we're going to continue to build a brand around how do we educate kids and adults outside of the school system. Their school system, there's so much red tape, and I wish I could get it into schools. And maybe one day that'll be possible. For right now, for anybody that wants to learn about financial freedom, like, I think my book's a really, really good starting point. It even has a chapter just called Legacy, literally dedicated to, you can take these concepts and you should teach them, because teaching is a great way to learn too, to your kids. So
yeah, there's so much truth there, because, you know, I have an MBA. I don't think anyone that listens to this show knows that, because it did absolutely nothing for me. I learned more driving around as a pharmaceutical rep, listening to like autobiographies from Steve Jobs and Ray Kroc, and you know, hanging out with the GDAT, of course, and learning multifamily systems than I did ever in school. You know, I worked at Radio Shack when I was in college. That was a better education than any MBA that I ever got. You know, there's, you know, learned sales. Pretty valuable stuff there. Mm-hmm. All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Involved in multifamily, this is where you need to be.
The team you've built is incredible.
There is no egos here. Everyone is always looking to help the other person.
All right, we're back. And this is the moment that everyone's been waiting for. I don't think you realize how much impact the answer from this next question is going to give you. Now, Mr. Vertically Integrated Rankin here has a property management company. He also has scattered site units throughout Wisconsin. Okay, not a big deal. He owns a property management company and he manages scattered site throughout his area. If he were to turn the keys over to that to a third-party property management company, I'm a betting man this time, I'm saying the profitability sinks and things go to shit. Now, scattered site is not easy. They'd also charge you more to do that. Tell me how important it is to you that you're running the ship and you're managing these businesses, and then, you know, get into that a little bit, but then also talk about what you think it would look like if you were to sub it out to third party.
Yeah. If I was going to sub it out to third party, I agree, Jake. I probably think 20% probably net, I would lose. It's significant, and it's not just in, like, everybody thinks, well, it's the management fee. That's the last thing I'd be concerned about. It's the systems I'm turning over these units. It's the systems on
the accountability, because it's yours. Yeah,
exactly. I think that would probably be the biggest loss for sure. One thing that I absolutely love, and we didn't touch too much on, I took from my corporation job too, is that you said accountability. I think a lot of property management companies suffer from shared accountability. And at our company, there is no shared accountability. It drives me nuts. And what I mean by that is, like, at this company, everybody is either responsible or recognized for objective or a key metric or a KPI, whatever you want to call it. And there's nobody else that owns that same KPI or that same system. And I find that a lot of property management, that there's so much shared accountability, which really, really reduces your ability to drive profit, ownership, et cetera. And that's one of the biggest things, like, I'm proud of with my property management business and what makes it so fun too.
I don't want anyone on here to say, wow, I can't get third-party property management for these scattered sites, because 20% may seem like a big number. But if you're talking about the long-term and you're talking about principal pay down and you're talking about potentially starting your own third property management company, starting your own internally, or you're looking at the way these properties have appreciated over time, don't let that stop you. Because I started out as third party property management in the very beginning, and I didn't stick with it because I met Jake, but I would have continued to scale that. I would have known that the profitability would have been less, obviously. And I'm okay with that, because I'm looking for the long term. I'm looking not just for the transaction and not just for the monthly draw. I'm looking for, like Logan said, the 7 and 10 years. Because right now in multifamily, I think you're buying in decades. So if you're worrying about, like, the quarterly, one quarter, that's what the targets and that's what the staples of the world do. That's not what I think the business owners of the world do. So there's both sides to every story. Don't let this business stop you if you think, oh, I have to manage it myself. No, you can go out there and hire others. And then when you get to a certain size, if you want to bring it back in-house, do it. And if not, just continue to get third party. So I don't know.
But Dino, the point that I was making on it though is like, you go buy 100 unit, great. You're gonna be able to get third party on that easy all day long.
Gotcha.
But then try slipping a 10 unit in next to it and see the focus and the attention, the love and the care that the 10 unit gets, right? Or if you have a 10 and a 5 across town, that's the point that I'm making. And that's the cool thing about being vertically integrated is you can pull in these smaller assets to the big ones and still focus on those. And that's when, you know, when Logan was saying earlier, if I see a great deal, I'm going to buy that. Whereas a lot of times you can get good property management on a larger asset. It's just sometimes the smaller ones, I think, get neglected. And it's a strategic advantage to being vertically integrated. That was the biggest point that I was trying to pull through there.
And you're exactly right, Jake. And you can also get the best deals. Because it's super hard to, I mean, most, you can't, it's hard to afford even one property manager at a 50 unit, right? Which is why you see those go at lower prices, because somewhere between like 20 and 70 units, I think it's really tough for third-party property managements to be able to run. And you got to really think about your work streams in your own property management company to do.
So. And that's why we'll bundle, you know, 170 to 250 or something like that as a district. And then we still get a lot of, you know, hyper focus from the APM, the PM and the regional there. So let's talk a little bit about habits. Anything that you do on like a daily or weekly basis that has been, you know, something that added success or positivity to your life?
Yeah, I would say one of the big things that I shared a little bit earlier, but it's probably the most impactful per week and then once a month. The biggest habit that I do is, like I said, every single Sunday, I really will carve up my entire week. I'll put everything together. And I seriously want to map out every minute. I even put flexibility time in there. I just want to be even in financial freedom, you just want to be very intentional with your time. And that's important to me. And especially with being vertically integrated, there's a lot of businesses and people that are demanding of your time. But one of the cool things about that process that I do is I reflect back on the week before and I go through all the things that I screwed up or I didn't stick to my schedule. And why didn't I stick to my schedule? For example, things happen, right? Like I was just sharing with you guys before this episode, we had a tornado that came through and ripped off a roof. And if that pulled more of my time this morning to be able to handle, the question is, why did it, right? Whose responsibility should it have been to file the claim in my company? What roofer should we have to go out there? And therefore, this shouldn't land on my plate anymore. And I think that's a really good thing that a lot of people should do if you're scaling, if you're growing your business, is reflect on the week before too, right? So that you can obviously make changes that make sense in the future. And the other thing I just want to share real quick, I love habits, besides the normal shit, like working out in the morning, trying to eat healthy, that stuff. But I mean, this is in my book too. Like I love my once a month, like alignment, sit down with my wife. I just think like, you know, even there's a lot of things that go on. And I think it's just super important to have the conversation around, you know, what I'm her accountability partner and she's mine. And we have some goals separate. We have some goals together. And so if you have a significant other, I think taking the time to align once a month and kind of talk about what the future looks like, not just for the next month, but you know, what is your vision and you know, how are you guys going about it together? We do that before we even get into the financial plan. And then we review the financial plan and how is that helping you towards your vision? Because whether you're financial free or not, that vision is going to always change. And I think that's a really important habit that we've kept up with.
Yeah, lean into these things that are scaring you or bothering you and fix it. Don't just let it go on in perpetuity. That's where the pain comes from. Address the shit weekly and get rid of it. I think that's a great point. And I will say a couple of years ago at Multifamily Mastery, our flagship event, one of our partners, Rick Sapio, was speaking there and he talked about his family placemat and his meeting cadence with his wife. And that was revolutionary for me because my wife and I started after that, we started meeting weekly. And right after I plan my week out on Sunday mornings, we meet weekly and we have this a similar cadence to our L10s. And we go over what's coming up for the week, you know, what contractors are coming to the house, what's vacation. And there's no thought process to it because it's all dialed in and we're just comparing these notes. And it has been just huge for our relationship. There's better alignment. And I can't recommend those types of meetings and that cadence enough. I completely agree with you. I don't want to miss that point because it made a huge impact on me. And we're more aligned and there's less stupid little arguments like, oh, you didn't know the kids had karate, this, that, and the other things going on. Or you're going to, you know, Charlotte next week. It's no, we're dialed in because we've spoken about it. We've looked each other in the eye and we're more aligned. So that's a fantastic point. And Rick has that family placemat, right? You know, that's what he calls it.
Yes. Yeah.
You could, if you guys sure want you Google that.
Yeah. Just email me Gino@jakeandgino.com and I'll share the link with you guys.
It's got the family core values on it. He even took it, has like this crest from Italy that looks like something out of like Knights. It's pretty. I don't know how much you paid for the logo. Probably too much, but he feels good about it, you know? So you got the book out. Any books that you've read in the last year or 2 years that really made a positive impact on your life that you want to recommend for folks?
Recently I read another Ray Dalio book, The Principles, with the debt crisis coming up, which I think is pretty prevalent for right now.
There's a video out there too, if you want to hack it, because that thing looks chunky, man.
It is. It's really chunky. And you can
it'll the wealth gap. It's going to tear us apart. Make more money, sucker.
And a recent book that I actually just finished that I think is awesome, if you want to understand how to build an organization, it's like How to Build an Elite Organization. I think it's by Don Willner. Excellent book. And he's in the real estate space too, but more vertically integrated. And I think that's an awesome book. It talks a lot about, it reminds me a lot of Traction, honestly, but different and more leadership focused.
Very cool. Very cool. Where can folks get the book?
Amazon, pretty much any site that sells books, but it's on Amazon right now. And
Can you get it to Target yet?
Not yet. Should be soon, right?
maybe you have some connections there. All right, G-Funk Papa, entrepreneur, multifamily man, take us home here.
Mr. Logan Rankin, starting out with zero deals. I mean, even Jake and Gino did a deal in their first 18 months. Logan took a little bit longer, but it's okay, because year three, he's got 7 units. Then year four, he's got 50, and then he's off to the races. And now he's closing 600 units. It doesn't happen overnight.
I didn't even know they made him that big.
but everyone think about it. He graduated college in 2010 with $40,000 in student debt. And a decade later, completely revolutionized his life. And I think the important thing is, everybody, he has this, say it to me, Jake. Let me get.
He said proper planning prevents piss poor performance. You can't wear the white t-shirt, Gino. It's effing you up today. You got to get a button down, bro. I'm just not there.
You know why? Because it's you step back and you say to yourself, man, it takes a long time to go financially free. But everybody think about it. At 30 years old, he became financially free. And I love the way he really defines it to himself. It's really taking back control of his time. And ultimately, I think that's what multifamily has done for the three of us on this call. It's an amazing vehicle. We haven't worked less. I think all three of us can say we're probably working more, but we're working for impact and we're working for things that we love. And also, I think that legacy.
More purpose too, right? Yeah. I think we all have an extreme amount of purpose and drive behind what we're doing, because we're building something, you know, not only for ourselves, but our partners and our families for the long term. I think that's where that legacy comes in.
That's the last thing I just wanted to make, was that legacy. Once you've done it, or as you're doing it, think about the legacy you want to leave, because it may take a little while to become financially free, but that's okay. It's worth the time. It's worth the struggle. It's worth the effort, but make it something bigger than yourself, because once you have enough money, you won't be chasing money anymore. You'll be chasing opportunities. And once you find those opportunities, what are you going to do to leave that legacy onto the next generation?
Man, well said, sir. We got Mr. Logan Rankin, our brother from north of the wall, up there getting roofs ripped off, and he's still making it happen. So Logan, really appreciate you coming on today and sharing your story.
Thanks, Logan.
Guys. Thank you, guys.
See you guys.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track. We care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.